When a form of music that our children like becomes linked with ghoulish images and violent theatrics, it demands our attention. Hundreds of thousands of teenagers are locked onto so-called heavy metal music.
I grew up metalhead. I love 80s. Yeah! 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 80s metal, like Metallica. Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
What do you call this? Well, this piece is called I Lick My Laugh Pump.
It's gonna be abrasive, it's gonna be sickening, it's gonna be hard to listen to, it's gonna be aggressive, and it's gonna fucking kick you in the fucking balls with a pussy.
So hey, welcome back to Somewhere in Time Podcast, episode 4, part 2. This is going to be a continuation of our discussion with Craig LoCicero from Forbidden and Dress the Dead. We get into a little bit of new music stuff here, continue our conversation with the 30th anniversary of Forbidden Evil. And once again, thanks so much to Craig from Forbidden and Dress the Dead for joining us on this really special episode. You can find more about Dress the Dead on facebook.com/dressthedead. They also have a website, dressthedead.com. And yeah, enjoy. Well, since this is a 30th anniversary of Forbidden Evil, was Forbidden Evil the first time you were in a studio? Is that the first time you'd actually?
Oh, no, because we demoed. But I mean, for real.
Okay. Yeah, like, for real.
And we pulled the guy that did our two Forbidden demos in to be work with John Cunaberde, that Doug Caldwell. And I think that's another reason why that album is so good, because we had a thread from the guy that understood how to record our drum sound.
Okay.
Because he was good with drums, man. Doug Caldwell, so good with drums. And Paul, you know, just like, it was his go-to guy. And Cunaberde was great with guitars, you know.
Okay.
But, yeah, we weren't even no pre-production. Like, let's just go in and... You know, we're lucky that album, it's flying by the seat of your ass. And I think that's part of the reason why it has charm.
Yeah.
But it's part of the reason why it's all over the place in certain ways. And, you know, not everybody was as prepared as the next guy when they went in. Yeah. Like, I did a little Captain Midnight on some things here and there. And, you know, everybody kind of helped cover for each other when they needed to. And
we bought a lot of records back then, and that one stood way out.
Yeah, probably a ton of them were made that way. The funniest thing about that is that the vocals recorded in one day.
Oh my gosh!
Huh. Yeah, and Glenn decided not to pick me up that day. He's like, I'm just not going to pick him up. And then that was it. And I'm like, what the fuck? But I wasn't writing most of the lyrics yet at that point. Okay. But yeah, there's a lot of lyrics on there that I like, but I don't mind them now. But for years, I was like, ugh. you know, I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, they recorded it. So I had to get used to those vocals. They would make me cringe. And then over time, I just accepted them. And then they became like just the way they are, and they're cool.
Yeah.
But the little anal retentive kid in me was like, what the fuck is this? For years, I was like,
Wait, are you talking about the lyrics themselves or the way you were singing?
The lyrics and some of the vocal, some of the things they had him do. Like changing words here and there that just no.
Yeah, it's weird when it's your own art.
I don't mean to ruin it for you guys. It's just
that's
something I had to deal with. I had to internalize it and not say it publicly for like forever. Like,
So I mean, we're kind of like geeky about the production of albums. That you know, if an album didn't sound as good, we talk about it kind of on this podcast. But Forbidden, even Forbidden Evil, like you guys had some of the best mixed, well-produced albums, in my opinion, of any of the
guitar
metal
sounds,
bands.
Especially. Yeah,
yeah. You could hear everyone, and it's clean. You know.
Yeah.
So whatever it was working.
Yeah, we didn't want to stack too much shit. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll also something I think that we did. I mean, well, you know, an album could be cleaner if one guy plays all the guitars. You know, that happens for certain bands, and I don't need to mention them, but some
Metallica?
Of the metal bands. That was they sounded better when that was the way they did it, and then they went back.
They don't do it anymore. You know,
but yeah, there's a lot of bands that have done it. But Forbidden had always been one guy on one side, one guy on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that didn't change until Omega Wave. Then I played on two on the outside, and we had Steve in the middle. But other than that, it was always, and if I did it again, I'd go right back to this, you know?
Yeah.
I just think that this works. Yeah. You don't have to double your tracks. You don't have to. People like to. They like to thicken it up. But there's a character that sits on either side of that. And if you're tight enough, if you do your homework and you're ready, and there's something, even if it's not perfect, there's a character that I think wins in the magic and, in the air. And it's just hard for people you get in the studio with Pro Tools. It's so easy to fix everything. It's
like, Oh yeah.
And that's one thing I won't do. That's one thing we didn't do on Omega Wave. Is I purposely, when it came to the mixing, I was like, man, let's not, don't suck the life out of this. I want it to feel like an old school record.
Right. Yeah.
But we didn't move things around. It just is what it was. And that's the way it is with Dress the Dead. And it's the way Rob did it with us. It's like, it's just what you hear, that's a demo. But it's really, really recorded well. And it's just one guitar on one side, one guitar on the other side, no overdubs and vocals, two tracks of vocals. And that's, if you can make it sound like that, then I think you have something that lasts longer. But there's the industry standard argument. And I get really bored with.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff sounds the same now. You go, you put on Liquid Metal and you're like, I don't know who's who anymore. Because it's all produced the same. And
that's a good example.
Yeah.
That's a good example.
What's Liquid Metal? Is that XM radio?
Yeah, it's Sirius. Yeah. I change the channel because I go, I don't know who this is. And it doesn't matter because it sounds like the last band and they suck too. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, there's some good stuff out there, man.
There is for sure. But
it's unfortunate. It's like I'm at that age now where this all becomes clear too, that, you can only do the things the first time, one time.
Yeah.
And, I was alive at the advent of metal. I was born the same year that, Black Sabbath put out Black Sabbath.
Right.
So from that point, my little eardrums just caught on to I grew up on the Beatles. Things in my back, even Simon and Garfunkel, whatever my parents were listening to.
Sure. Yeah.
But just things in my background, my periphery, my subconscious that stuck with me. You'd be hard pressed to find younger people today that get those little subliminal influences.
Yeah.
So there's just like a lack of real substance as to what they're listening to. Because if you're influenced and you're only influenced by, say, Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, and then you've moved on to, I'm only influenced by Slipknot and, Godsmack. And it's like you're getting further and further away from the core.
Right.
The substance that made all this shit. So that's where we are now.
Yeah.
And
that's
10 more years, I'll be like all fucking old and like, but right now I'm still in the middle of it and I'm not mad about it, but I see it. I see it.
Well, and we recognize too, when we talk about these albums, that a lot of this is nostalgia too. Like when we grew up, of course it's going to be better because this is, that's the ripe age when you're 13 to 23 or whatever. That's when you're really taking in all of that music and that's when all the good stuff happened. Right. So
it's like Henry Rollins says, you need albums to hump. Like that's basically what it is.
Cool. You know what I was also missing is the cool uncle factor. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone had that cool uncle that would play him something cool and, influence him some way. Nowadays, it's just all weird.
Yeah.
So, you don't have that one garage that you used to go to listen to those fucking records and drop the needle and go, whoa, I had a friend, my mom went to church at this place and the preacher's son was this guy who had this raging metal collection and he, in 1981, I went over, and I was already familiar with AC/DC and Rush and, Little Judas Priest and whatnot. But he let me look through his records, and he had, like, everything from the Plasmatics to, Paranoid. Mm-hmm. And he's like, take whatever you want, man. He's a few years older. Groove on it for a week, check it out. And that's where I got Killers. Wow. And I got Unleashed in the East. I'd already, I had things that were, Killers was brand new, like, might have come out that month or something.
Right.
But this stuff was like, I got turned on to this stuff, and that's like that cool uncle factor, like I'm saying. Yeah. Somebody that actually, he wasn't my uncle, but he turned me on to some great shit.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, thank you for that. Yeah. Chris Spotts is his name.
Okay.
And you got to help carry the torch or pass the torch. It's up to us. And that's why I do it with even some of my posts or whatnot. I'll go back and I'll be like, you know, check this out. A lot of these kids aren't really hip to it.
Yeah, definitely not.
They really will never be. It's not their fault. It's no one's fault. No. It's just time.
It's a different time completely.
Uncharted waters, though, right? This is where we're everything's moving forward from one era's done, and we're moved into another one. And you know, the digital age and the way music shared is all weird. Everything's just different.
Yeah. It was kind of more special then when you found something that was really good because it was so hard to find.
Yeah,
and you go,
it was way better.
It was treasure hunting.
I mean, it really was. Sorry, kid. Yeah. It was a fucking 100 times cooler than it is.
Oh yeah. Because you found it, you discovered it. You're like, oh my god, does anyone else know about this? This is awesome.
Yeah.
And
my discovery to this kind of metal and Venom and Merciful Fate and all that stuff is because when I moved to the Bay Area from Las Vegas, it was 1983. It was April of 83. And I wasn't hip to anything besides Saxon and Maiden and stuff like that. You know, Motorhead. I was into all that. I was into the heaviest of the heavy that I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at this record store, this place called the Record Factory in Fremont, where I grew up. And that's where Rob's from too, from Fremont, California. Right. And I was just looking through like for a Circus or a Hip Parader or a Cream or something, just like, what do you think? And then I see this little crumpled up newspaper looking thing. It says Metal Mania. What's this? And it's like on the front cover, it's like there's I think it was Merciful Fate, a little picture of Venom, a little picture of Metallica, and then the thing about Dave Mustaine from Metallica starts a new thing called Megadeth. Like, so he had just been fired, and it was like a few months later, you know.
Yeah.
So this is the advent of thrash metal. It is Ron Quintana.
Yeah.
Who actually named Metallica.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's a good friend. Like, it's so crazy how it all kind of turned around. So, yeah, but I mean, like this little crumpled up magazine. It's this record store called, there's a Record Vault, but that's in San Francisco. But then there's this other one called the Record Exchange. That one's in Walnut Creek. That's on BART. It's easier to get to. So I went and my whole intention was to see if I could find something new and a bunch of Iron Maiden imports. Like the singles and stuff. So I did, and I walked away with Welcome to Hell and some Maiden imports and the Merciful Fate EP, Corpse Out of Soul EP. And that EP, I walked around high school with it, and another kid recognized that I had this thing called Merciful Fate. He's like, hey, dude, I know a guy. He's a Chinese guy. He's like, I know this guy likes the same crap you like. Well, nobody likes what I like. He's like, no, I do. He lives in Fremont, too. That guy was Rob Flynn.
Nice.
And that's how we met. So the next day I met Rob, and he had a big, vast record collection of stuff like Witchfinder General. And, you know, Rob was like a very – all his records are like neatly wrapped. And he was like a nerd metal kid.
Yeah.
Amazing guitar player already. I sucked. I was horrible. And, you know, for a year, we just like were friends and – so that whole thing escalates to, you know, when I see Ron Quintana, like I adore Ron because he changed my life, you know, like, these things stick. So our Bay Area scene's got this real tangible bonding and friendship. You know, we've ridden all the crap out and metal died and came back and yet we're all here. If Uli's in town, I know where I'm going to find those guys, you know, like, you know, like it's just, you know, Saxon's here. We're all going to be there because they were all older than me, but they took me under the wing. Like Harold O took me under his wing. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
You know, like Harold's a good friend. And I love these guys. I really do. I genuinely adore our scene and the roots. You know, you got to respect that stuff.
Yeah. We were comparing our scene to yours.
There's no scene.
Basically, we had Wrathchild America was our. Our claim to fame.
You had Bad Brains.
Yeah, Bad Brains. Yeah. And later on, we had Clutch and Half Clutch.
But, and I love Clutch. Clutch is one of my favorite. I used to do a radio show called the Omega Wave Show. It was more about, you know, life, and we didn't necessarily just talk about music. Talk a lot of conspiracy stuff, but other stuff too.
Yeah,
wrestlers. I interviewed all kinds of people, but Neil Fallon was probably my favorite interview.
Yeah,
because he's so brilliant, and he's, you know, he's got his master's in, you know, English literature.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, really? That's awesome. you can't write that poetry and not have like some sort of.
Yeah,
he gets it. He's so brilliant.
You guys talked about wrestler. I got like all these wrestler. You can't see it on my. I got all these wrestlers and wrestling belts behind me here.
Austin Aries is a friend of mine.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, Austin. Well, my buddy Bill Shields is one of my best friends, and he's suffering from ALS right now.
Mm. That sucks.
And he was just, you know, suffering for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But he introduced me to Austin because he's an old pro wrestler. Bill wrestled. I met him in the first Forbidden Evil tour with Exodus, and he's been my friend ever since. So, but I mean, I met a lot of people through Bill and did different wrestling functions. But I've become friends with Austin, who I think is, you guys, hey, want a smart interview? Talk to that guy about music and metal and stuff.
Oh, really?
Austin. Yeah. None of these wrestlers are as dumb as they want to act. You know, they're all, you have to be pretty smart to move and not get hurt.
Yeah. Well, I know Austin's smart. He's got a book that he put out recently, right?
Is it have to do with veganism?
Apparently it's almost all about that, but yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I'd be interested to read
it. He tolerates us meat eaters, but, you know, but Austin's fucking great. And I'm so stoked for him that he's moved his way up to be in the champ and all those little, you know, smaller wrestling divisions. But he's the guy. Like right now, he's the guy, isn't he?
The guy.
He has like four belts.
I don't know. I'm not keeping up with Austin's career. I should. I just saw
him win another one the other night.
Since I've gotten back into this metal podcast, my wrestling time has dwindled like rapidly because I'm listening to just all these old thrash metal albums again. So
your time's better spent there.
Yeah, I agree.
100%.
I got a lot of respect for Austin. He's extremely smart and cool guy. So.
Yeah, well,
if you ever want to go off the grid and do a wrestling interview, I could probably set you up with that.
Joe will do that. Joe will go do that for sure.
Yeah.
We're not into wrestling. Like we watched the WWF from like the 80s, but Joe's the wrestling guy. We're not the wrestling guy.
That's what I liked it. I liked the when I lived in Vegas, they used to wrestle at the Showboat, and they used to show those matches, and it was like, you know.
Actually, I'm wearing a WrestleMania. It's backwards for you guys. I'm wearing this.
Oh, your WrestleMania 31.
It was in San Jose actually too.
You know, Austin wrestled the day before that one. And then the next year, he wrestled at WrestleMania.
Yeah, he had one of the best matches on that show the next year.
Yeah, he opened it up, right?
And I think they cut him like a month later for no reason.
He's doing really good, dude. Trust me. Austin, he's awesome. He's kicking some ass.
Cool.
Tim was talking about the D.C. area. Just for your benefit, Craig, if you don't know the band Wrathchild America, they were actually just want to make sure because we're big fans of theirs too, and anytime we can promote them we do, I think
Shannon Larkin did some pretty amazing things, you know.
Yeah. Oh my god,
absolutely. That dude was crazy. We saw them like 30 times because anytime we came around
band that shoulda coulda woulda, you know.
Yeah, they were good.
They were really good. That might have been the coolest thing that he has ever done, you know. Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for him that he's in a successful band now with Godsmack. I'm not a huge Godsmack fan, but I'm really happy that he's in that band because he's such a good dude. And
he deserves it,
He deserves it, yeah. So.
Yep, I agree. Yeah,
guys.
Yeah. We also had Black Flag, too. DC produced Black Flag.
Yeah. Was he?
I'm just saying DC produced Black Flag, too.
Oh, no, of course. They're fucking, you know, Damage is another back pocket one for me.
Yeah. So.
But it wasn't the same. Is the Bay Area thing?
No. We can claim like four bands, and Bay Area can claim like 30 bands. So.
Yeah, really.
No, we don't claim 30. I mean, there are some obscure.
Yeah.
There's some cool ones that just, you know, needed a little bit more credit, but really.
Mordred.
I mean, if you know, there's Mordred, some cool ones, man. That like, you know, like Sacrilege BC was like a real influential one in the beginning. You know. You know,
I discovered Blind Illusion last night.
Yeah. At the beginning. You know,
that's what I listened to last night. Yeah.
What was the Primus band? Is that Blind Illusion?
Mm-hmm.
Was that? Les Claypool was Blind Illusion. Is that right?
Yeah. Our Forbidden Evil's album release, we had Blind Illusion play with us, with Les in the band.
Huh. Oh, wow.
Sublime's at the same time as well.
Wow.
There's a lot of like real ironic stuff, like you know, the producer that did the Primus albums was a kid that went to school in Fremont named Matt Weiniger, who just won a Grammy last year for the Fabulous Negrotto. Fantastic Negrotto. But he's great. He's like an artist, but he's a producer and a good friend of mine. And I've written some music with him. We've done stuff together.
Cool.
There's a big circle, like all of our friends in Fremont, there's really talented circle of guys. And when Rob did his last birthday party last year, the 50th one, we pulled more Fremont guys in. We kind of ignored, we didn't get as many guys on the outside, and we pulled more guys than we knew. They're all, you know, pretty well known out here.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because just people got to see like all these super talented guys that we all grew up with, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So you never had a run in with, or never got to, you said you never had a run in with Dave Mustaine. Did you ever get to do anything with Metallica? I mean, I'm sure you saw them.
Them more than anybody. I mean, well, as far as the big ones.
Yeah.
You know, I James I'd see the least because he didn't go out very often.
Right.
But I have a, you know, you like him, I like him too. I got a lot of respect for him, and he's got a killer one of these. You know, his right hand.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fire. Yeah. So he's James, my man.
Yeah, James is great, and Kirk is like the nicest dude, you know, ever. Like, such a nice guy, dude. Trust me, Kirk is super sweet. As is Robert.
Yeah.
And I jammed with Robert at the first Rob Flynn thing because that I actually put that together and brought it to him, and then we changed it to that to make it bigger, right? Called it Rob Flynn and Friends. But he pulled in Robert, and we did four songs together. Mm-hmm. And there's a great picture of him and I. Fuck it, I squatted as low as him. I was like, I can go. So we were like squatting together. But yeah, he's a really, I mean, you know, he played with Mike Muir, who's like, my cousin.
Yeah.
And we talk about that, you know. And Lars is Lars, man. You know, he'll float around. He might be, when he talks to you, he might be looking over you and around you.
I've heard that, yeah.
You know, it's like, but he's still, he's integral. He's important.
Yeah,
and he knows, absolutely. He'll tell you so. He matters. but he does, you know.
He does.
He does. They do. But yeah, you know, and Jason Newsted, I actually jammed with him once. I was going to, when my band Man Made God was ending, Eric Kretz from Stunt Double Pilots, who played with me a little while in Spiral Arms too, but we went over and jammed at Jason's place thinking maybe we'll put a band together.
Huh. Yeah.
And we went and jammed with him, and he was not ready to, like, the Metallica experience pretty much is zapped any real love for like the business or wanting to get your feet dirty, you know, your hands dirty. Mm. He's just not really, he thinks he wants to do it. And then every time he starts doing, he's like, that ain't as cool as what it was with Metallica. So I could sense right away that he was, we walked out of there, got in the car and went, what was that? Cause he's great. You know, he's a cool dude. He's great. But he wanted me, he's like, you know, Stoner Rock. I'm like, yeah, I know Stoner Rock. Play stuff like Stoner Rock. I'm like, okay. You know, so Eric didn't feel the connection there, but I got a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
And Cliff Burton, I got to see play in a living room.
Oh my God.
not even 2 months before he passed away in Casper Valley. Harold O invited me to a party, and I went and got to watch him perform with Jim Martin and the old drummer at Heathen, and they did a bunch of covers.
Oh wow.
And I totally didn't belong. I think I was like, how old was I? He died in 86?
Yeah, 86.
Yeah.
I think I just turned 17.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
I would leave there going, well, I can die now. I can officially die now. I just saw
He died not soon after.
I know.
But yeah, it was a really great experience watching, because, you know, he did what he did, did he?
Yeah.
As soon as he played anyone else's song, he'd just start headbanging, and he's just fucking raging, and he put his foot up on the couch. You know what I mean? It was like everyone was back. It wasn't a room full. It was just a few friends, and this guy was standing there because I got invited by Harold.
Yeah.
No business being there. In fact, the guy yelled at me because I put my foot on his wall. He goes, who the fuck is this guy? I'm like, Harold invited me. He's like, what? Put on my wall. I'm like, you're having a party. I didn't know you could put your foot on it. He's all, dude, he wanted to kick my ass. Oh, no, don't do it. I think Cliff was even all, no, man, come on. You know?
That's insane.
That's
awesome. Wow.
That's insane. That's why I play bass was I saw Cliff Amall. I played drums and I was like, I'm switching.
Like, yeah, I play drums because of Lars.
So. There's more drummers than there needs to be. There's more guitar players. Not enough bass players.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not enough bass players play bass like a bass should be played.
Joe does.
Joe does. Joe's got the finger down. You've got the fingers. You play with the fingers. Yeah. You don't do the cheating.
Well, I don't
pick
mean
thing.
Necessarily fingers. I just mean like you can play with your pick. You play with your fucking dick. You play with your nose. I don't give a shit. But you don't have to play all the time. A bass player needs to stop and go. And so you'd feel the bass coming in and out of the music instead of it just being constantly mirroring guitar.
Yeah. Hmm. I couldn't mirror guitar because I'm not fast enough with the music we played. So.
But here's something for the Metallica fan. And that's the reason why Jason Newsted was muted on Justice for All, because he played all the guitar parts. He played them so tight that they ended up fucking with the guitar tone in James's head. So he's like,
I've heard so many different stories as to why the bass is low on that album. Like,
that's the reason, because there's a version. Yeah. Go listen to it with the bass loud.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's out there on YouTube.
He's not doing anything different than the guitars are doing.
Yeah.
He's just taking up a frequency that he wanted his speakers to be farting out in the guitar.
But that's
I think even Jason admitted though that like, look, I know that I was new and I was just basically doing what they were doing. So it doesn't upset me that they turned me down because I was a new guy and I was just basically mimicking the guitar anyway. So
he's not upset anymore.
Anymore, yeah. Yeah. Well, that was an interview from like 3 years ago, I think, that I
read. He was plenty upset at the time. Yeah,
of course, sure. As he should have been. But
yeah, I mean, it's not easy thing to take.
No.
You know?
No. That was another 88 album, too.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah. No, hey, I remember when we picked that album up and we brought it home, we're listening to it, we're like turning up the bass all the way.
Is there bass on this album? Right.
It wasn't like it never did that. And then. What is it? And then it like blew the speakers right.
I'm afraid it is.
Man, I can't even tell you how many people are. My speakers blew up, man. On that one spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't know.
Yeah. Right.
That's right. What song is that?
Freight Ends.
Freight Ends. Yeah.
Sanitay.
That's right. Oh man!
What else are you guys into these days, huh?
Ghost, Gojira.
Like we're the big Mastodon, three, like you said.
Like Mastodon. You said, yeah.
I love Mastodon. My son loves Mastodon too.
That's good.
We get to see them when they come to town. Braun takes care of us, and he likes my son. So
yeah, cool. My son he's about to turn 15. He just discovered Clutch, and I'm actually taking to see Clutch in August. His first metal show in August. So.
I got nothing but love for Clutch, man. That's an album I almost threw in my top 10, like influential. I almost went back to Blast Tyrant.
That might be our favorite album by them.
Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, that to me that's their most complete.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what we said.
The one where there's no bad song on it. Yeah, well, you know, some songs just kind of meander.
Yeah,
but his lyrics, I really, truly, firmly believe that his lyrics should be put into the time capsule and buried.
Yeah.
100 feet underground.
Yeah,
because if people want to know what the fuck went wrong with humanity, they should hear it through his humor.
Yeah, that's the truth.
He's the Mark Twain of, you know, this generation.
Yeah.
When did you first hear Clutch? Like,
first album
was it? Okay, yeah.
So yeah, the show.
I don't know if we, being like DC area, had like
Del Mar Arigato. If you want to, or was Del Mar Arigato? If you want to,
Tim and I saw. I think our introduction was Clutch. To Clutch was opening for Voivod of all bands.
Wow,
Clutch, and we saw. It was at the Bayou in DC.
Georgetown.
And we saw
Piggy in the band still.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was 94,
I think.
Yeah, but we saw him do
The Outer Limits when they were Outer Limits.
Yeah.
I love that album.
That's my favorite Voivod album. But we saw Clutch doing what is the come on motherfucker, on motherfucker,
binge and purge,
binge and purge,
and we saw that song, we were like, holy shit,
what is this?
This man is awesome.
Well, his voice is so commanding, and he's such a cool, like I said, I did that interview with him, and he was making, his wife is making dinner in the background, I could almost smell the food being made, you know, his kids are running around him, and see, that's my kind of guy, you know, you know, he's a normal person, he's a working musician, but he's an, you know, important voice. He's an important, you know, not just voice, but his point of view is important. Like, he matters incredibly. You know, I could gush about it, like how much I respect that guy. One time when Forbidden was the first tour back in 2008, when we were in Europe, we had an off night in Rhine, Germany, and Clutch is playing, you guys want to go? I'm like, fuck yeah. So we go, and then I'm doing an interview with Rockhard out front, and then Neil comes out, he's doing an interview with another guy, and this is when Europe was just booming with chemtrails at that point. Like, you know, if you know what this is, not the vapor, well, you could say they're vapor trails, or but they're not. Chemtrails are the large ones that dissipated and turned into, like, you know. And I looked up and I was like, man, there's a lot of chemtrails up today. And then I just, through the corner of my eyes, I see, he goes, and he just like turns his head at me real quick. And he's like, he looks back. He's all, and then, you know, I talked to him for a minute after the show, but I didn't really get to talk. I've talked to him since then, obviously.
Yeah.
And I reminded him when Clutch and Mastodon, they just got off stage, and he's like, hey, how you doing? You know, I could walk right up to my son. I was like, hey, man. I did an interview with you on a show with Bill Shields. All, that's that guy from St. Louis. He's like, yeah, I remember that. I'm like, yeah. So he's like, you know, never, he connects like Dio does. He's very, very connected to what
awesome.
He remembers everything.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's super cool.
Well, other new music. I mean, we're listening to stuff other than metal too.
Yeah, sure.
Like Manchester Orchestra is a great
band.
It's a band.
Yeah, that's some good rock, huh?
Yeah.
It's a rock band, right?
Yeah,
they're rock, kind of alternative, but very. I don't know. I don't know how to explain how to describe them. They're just
almost orchestral in a way.
Yeah, almost orchestral. And the singer's very, very good.
Is that because orchestra's in the name?
Yes.
Sure.
That doesn't always mean anything.
Yeah.
The night flight orchestra out of Sweden, pure rock and roll stuff, right? Kind of 80s rock.
And of course, the Hamilton soundtrack. My wife is huge into Hamilton.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, it's not bad.
I like Hamilton. Really? It's in D.C. right now, and I can't afford a ticket.
Deftones. Deftones is another great band.
Oh, yeah. Deftones.
Oh, yeah, always. Deftones. Yeah. That last, or actually, that Deftones album 2 albums ago was incredible.
Diamond Eyes?
Well, Diamond Eyes was like 2011.
Bunch of that. Okay.
There's the one after that.
Yeah.
The,
not like Gore. I know you're talking about
Japanese name. Or
something.
That one. No Koyokin or whatever.
Yeah, that one's fucking ripping. The production is insane on that record.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, those guys, you know, we knew those guys too. From Sacramento. They actually opened up for Forbidden in 93? I think.
Oh, 93. Really? Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, some little shithole when they were kind of a funk. Rappy thing. They didn't really refine themselves until Around the Fur, you know. Then there was like that.
Yeah. We saw them open up for Anthrax, and I just remember walking in and seeing Chino on his head. He was doing a headstand and he was singing, and I was like, who the fuck is this? This is amazing. And that was on anymore. No. That was on the first album tour. I think it was that was 94, I think. Yeah, so.
Yeah, like another great band, man. Stefan, like, you know, those guys were all metal fans. We rented, when I was in Man Made God, we played in Philadelphia, all places, and they were in town playing a show. And we were playing with Taproot. So they all come walking through the door, and they're like, they look at me like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm in this band, Man Made God, or what's that? And then they're like, whoa, they were just all tripped out. And then we had a great night and hung out with them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
But they knew me as Craig from Forbidden. You know, they didn't know. A lot of people didn't know. If you haven't checked out the Man Made God record, it is on iTunes.
Okay.
And there's a band called Man Made God now. Some screamy little thing. I don't know what the fuck they're. But ours was a Rick Rubin record. It was his label. He signed us. He one of the first things we talked about is that Forbidden story. He's like, oh yeah, your manager turned me down.
So he would have produced Twisted Into Form if you had signed with him? Would he have produced
well,
it?
Well, I don't know what we would have called it. I don't know what the songs would have been. I doubt that he would have let us. I doubt he would have let us go down that road. I think what he liked about the band was that it was so raw, but yet we had all these elements of, you know, melodic, you know, metal from the past with Russ and the solos. He probably thought that, man, I could really do something tremendous if they did it like that. And I think Twisted Into Form probably would have been something he wouldn't have been as into, because it was refined, and it was, you know, he was the master of keeping things, like, you know, to their simplest form.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes he's amazing with it, and sometimes he doesn't get it. Like, sometimes with Rick, with us, he fell in, with Man Made God, he fell in love with my songs and the singer's voice, and he didn't relate to the drummer, and who was Steve Jacobs from Forbidden.
Wow. Yeah.
And my bass player who plays with me, James, it wasn't his fault, but he just didn't relate to the drums. So it took a while to get that record done, man. Cause he wanted to simplify the drums. Cause like, he just took everything out that was there. No. I remember one day he looked at Steve and he's all, Steve? And Steve's like, he's all, thrash metal drums bad. He's like, he does like a dog. And he's like, we're simplifying here. And I get it now, but it just crushed Steve's spirit. So I got along great with Rick, and he would have wanted to work with me more if I would have wanted to keep going with the singer, but we kind of, it just wasn't working. Like, our singer was just not equipped for superstardom. Yeah. And we were set in that direction. We were on the big tours. We were doing a lot of stuff. It's crazy. If you guys actually investigate, that band was supposed to be really big. Every management company in Los Angeles was after us. We ended up with Rick Sales, you know. Huh. Sanctuary had us. Rod Smallwood, you know. Yeah, it was an incredibly good rock record. Huh. But the journey to get there, just one. We just did the one record, then I called to quit. I ended the band because I just didn't think my singer was going to ever arrive at a point where he appreciated what we had. He wanted it all right then.
I'm about to buy it on Amazon, I think. So, but I want to make sure I have the right band.
It's the one with it's got like an alien eyeball. Looks like kind of a lizard eye.
Yeah. Like, okay. Safe Patches Passage is the first song?
Yeah, safe Package. Chafed Package, as we called it. Okay. Yeah, that's on there. That was our first single. And that was like big on, you know, rock radio for 6 months before the album came out. That's another problem. The album was going to come out, and then Island Def Jams did we were on Columbia when we signed, Sony Columbia, and then they got bought out, and then there was a big merger thing, and we were the band that they wanted off of American, only us and Slayer, and the System of a Down moved over to Columbia. So there's this whole change, and Man Made God was supposed to be the centerpiece, and we just didn't handle ourselves right. So I really think we fucked that up just by, I'll take my blame for not handling my singer properly at that point.
Yeah.
But let me just say, getting to end of that whole thing about that band, later on, we all got back together and became very close, and my singer definitely understood what he did wrong back then and got it. But it was all kind of too late, and I'm not down for going to the past and trying to relive a bunch of all that stuff. So, you know, I'm forgive and forget, and we all love each other.
Right.
But it was, that band was going to be fucking, people literally tear up when they talk about it. They get all emotional because those songs are deep. There's a lot of emotion in them. He's a great singer.
Great. Yeah. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm downloading it right now. Yeah.
I think we won't ever recoup, because that album came out to about $1 million to make.
Oh my God.
Holy what? Shit. Really?
Well, Ty's time almost, in the studio.
It was like $800,000+ by the time it was done, because we were living in Los Angeles.
I think this podcast is going to break it. I think.
Well, we rented gear that we didn't need. We wouldn't have needed that gear for 6 months. It was sitting around like, what the fuck, man?
So if I download one, Joe downloads one, Tim downloads one, let's do the math.
That's three.
Can we add it up to 800? No, I don't think we're going to do it.
How many do you need me to buy?
Yeah, we're not going to come close.
No.
I tried.
I think it might have sold about 40,000 copies, but the first week it sold like almost 6,000, and you know, we were disappointed because we thought we were going to chart for sure. Yeah. But the problem was is that with that merger, they pushed our album back. They had a date on sticker. We passed around like a 200,000 stickers that had a date, and everybody looked for the album that date, and they didn't put it out that date. Huh. And then when they put it out another date, but there was no advertisement saying it was coming out that date. But yeah, we still sold 6,000 units in like primarily the Midwest and the South where we toured the most active rock. Yeah. You know, so
what year was that?
The album came out in 2003.
Okay.
But we started recording it in 2001.
Okay. Wow.
It's one of those.
Yeah. Okay.
It's that in limbo and got passed around. Everyone's, it's going to be this, it's going to be that.
It was Ruben in the studio like all the time, or did he just kind of show up and then leave and come back and leave?
That's a whole other show. First, we did pre-production for a month. Then we were living down there for that. Then we actually went and recorded, and we did drums for like a month. Then we started doing guitars for a few weeks, and I missed the Thrash of the Titans thing because I was busy doing that. The first one with Chuck Billy. So you don't see me on the Thrash of the Titans video because I was stuck in LA and not able to even escape.
Oh, man.
And it was like $1,500 a day for that studio.
Oh, my God.
You know, it was insane. It was just the amount of money. There's a cook there every night.
Oh, my God. We've made it.
Yeah, we thought we made it. And all we ended up doing is making a gigantic hole for ourselves.
Oh, man.
Something I will never do again. So hence, why I say I'm taking my time to address the dead. I'm never going to make that mistake because I've got the greatest situation with people that are smart. I'm never going to fuck that up again, man.
That's good.
You know?
Well,
and I don't expect as much either. So, you know, it's a combination.
Yeah.
Well, I hope for the best for you guys. And I would love for you guys to be able to tour and come out east because I would love to see you guys live.
Some touring, not as much as other bands might beat the, you know, their heads against the wall. I just see our music being able to, I could see us sliding into soundtracks and even writing soundtrack stuff. And
because that'd be awesome.
These guys are good, man. You know, it's a good bunch of players. And, you know, it's like I just see a different path. Like, I don't think we need to slam our heads against the wall to try to fit into anything because we're not going to. It's just, we're not going to really fit into anything.
But you'll play local shows though, right? Like in San Francisco.
Oh yeah, we'll tour. But I just saying, I don't see us touring like over and over extensively.
Okay. I gotcha.
You know, we're not going to be big enough to like, unless something catches on. You know, it's like something you don't beat your. I see bands beating their heads against the wall trying to play for 30 people.
If
the tour's right, if the band's big that we're touring with, if they're putting us on a good spot, if we can maintain ourselves out there. Otherwise, it's like just do, you know, write great music and then see what happens.
I mean,
it's just a different world, so I'm not chasing down the same thing.
I think 30 people is the most people we ever play for, right, guys?
I don't think even
in our,
30
in our little metal band that we were
in our band. Yeah,
nice
for sure. That's you know, I don't think we played for that many.
Yeah. I don't think it was 30. I think it was maybe 15.
This was the sound after each.
Woo!
You saw.
Well, I did a band, and we haven't even really talked about Fire Alarms, but that's what I did, and it was like a giant, I feel like it was a vacuum in my career. That was the only thing I really feel like didn't really amount to much, except for great music. And
but you got to play with Andy from Death Angel, though, right? In that band.
Well,
right?
I pulled him in to the end.
Yeah, I remember that.
He came in for the last, like, almost 2 years, and it was great for the first few months, and then he saw, like, whoa, you know, it was just a weird... I had the singer from Systematic, and I started this after Band They Got Ended, and he's a leader. I'm a leader.
Yeah.
The way, but I like to lead by being open, and he leads in his own way. And I stuck with it for far too long. And once Forbidden kicked off, he got very resentful. He got really resentful. And instead of it being a good thing that all these new fans were coming in to watch us, he didn't want Forbidden fans.
Oh, that's weird.
It was a weird thing. Yeah. I'm glad I'm out. But yeah, poor Andy.
Whew. Yeah,
he was so excited. He's like, "This is great." I'm like, "Yeah," and then the weirdness started. I just talked to him today. We're really tight.
Oh, cool.
Andy and I are like, I That's another guy I adore, Andy. I'm glad I got to play in a band with him for a while. And I almost asked him to do Dress the Dead, but it's not really his. The style of drumming Mark has just kind of suits what I write.
Yeah.
Right. For this, you know, that kind of. There's a lot more thrashy stuff you guys haven't heard that will come I'm all sure. come out.
Cool. No, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
There is a lot of it, and yeah, most I can't of wait. It is. You know, so.
Yeah.
How old was Andy on the first Death Angel album? Like 14.
I believe he must was. Have been.
Yeah.
I believe. Well.
He was
Ultraviolence, or was the one before that?
Ultraviolence, but
he was 17 when we toured. When I was.
20? He was born in 72, I think. I just looked this up recently.
Oh, okay, yeah, he's 3 years younger than me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he was 12 when he played with Metallica the first time.
That's crazy.
What? I can't even imagine.
And he's a phenomenal drummer. Even then, it was like, what's happening? Is this guy this good?
He's great. If I ever do a rock band, though, if I ever do like a real bona fide rock thing again, I would choose Andy over anybody, because that's awesome. He's like probably the best rock drummer I've ever played with.
Yeah, I have a Death Angel bootleg, and the camera angle is basically right behind him, so you can just watch him play. And I was just watching, just looking at my, just like, this guy is awesome.
Fucking great, man.
Yeah.
Fucking just, great. We did, you know, we recorded a record with Eric Kratz, actually, at his studio, the guy from Stone Temple Pilots. And,
okay.
And it hasn't come out. It might never come out.
Huh.
Because those guys, whatever.
Yeah.
So those guys, they're into their own thing right now, and they don't. They probably just let it rot, you know. But the shit he did on that record, we did some drum cam footage, and it was like, you know, it's got some. He's got some jungle drums in his blood, man. Yeah. he'll tell you that too, like the deep Philippines, like jungle drums. His mom was a drummer.
Okay.
Professional, you know. He has rhythm in his blood. He's great, and he's really, even in Death Angel, I consider him a rock drummer.
Yeah.
Even Death Angel, like he. He played fast once in a while, but he really didn't. He wasn't. He just wanted to like groove heavy. You know?
Yeah, they stood out. They were very different. Yeah, definitely.
Another one of the greatest drummers I ever played with. I played with some pretty good drummers, man.
Yeah, I would say.
Well, their stuff was not typical thrash. Their stuff, I was listening to Frolic Through the Park the other day, and it's a lot of almost crossover type stuff, like punk,
a lot of funk, and you know, like punk.
Yeah, rock. Like he's going all over the neck on that guitar. Like he's not sticking to the E. He's doing like all sorts of weird chords, and like it's different. Not your typical thrash.
Those guys were they wrote that album in the studio with us. They Forbidden Evil and Death Angel shared a studio at that time when they were writing Frolic. They were really into funk, Bad Brains again, like certain punk stuff. And Death Angel never followed the beat. They're more, without Andy in the band, they're far more straight up metal.
Definitely. The last three, four albums have been straight.
Great drummer.
Yeah.
Totally different style.
Yeah.
Not as interested in all that other stuff. Will loves metal.
Yeah.
Definitely. You can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's great stuff, though.
Yeah. There was a DVD that came with one of their albums, and they had some drum cam footage of him playing, and he was damn good.
we got so many great drummers around here, and I've played with Will. We did some the Violence stuff this last thing, and I've played with him at the Rob Flynn and Friends things, and I love playing with Will. I love playing with Andy. These guys are all good, you know.
Yeah.
Just, we got drummers, you know, for days. That's one thing the competition made great around here is drummers.
Yeah.
That Bo Staff guy was pretty good too.
He's all right. Yeah, not bad. He'll do.
What did you call him, Tim? A Jedi Master.
I said, what would it like to have a fucking Jedi Master behind you on drums? Like you're in a band. You're like, what do you want? He'll do anything you want. Just ask him. He'll do it.
Oh, that's Gene. Yeah, Gene's a Jedi Master.
Yeah. Gene, I thought Paul or Gene.
Definitely spins plates and you know. Yeah,
but then Gene on his DVD, if you watch his DVD, he says he's a lazy drummer, which is funny. He calls himself a lazy drummer because
he is. Because like I said, he's so much smarter than everybody else. He probably knows what he's really capable of.
It's basically what he says. He's like, I know how to get around certain things to make it easier for myself. So he considers he's not lazy, obviously, but he's
like I said, he'll stop. He won't take the other arm over this way.
Yeah,
he'll stop here.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll stop here, but he's not going over there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. That's just
no. Thing. That's smart. That's a smart thing. Because if it hurts playing drums sometimes.
Heavy, now he's lost, you know, like half a gene.
Yeah.
You know, so, like he's lost over well over 100 pounds.
Oh, good for him.
That's great.
Yeah, his future wife is amazing. She's a great girl. In fact, if you see the picture on Facebook I posted today, that little girl is his girlfriend, and Laura Christian. She's amazing. So good. Just a smart, witty little girl, like sweetheart, man.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
So she cooks some good food, you know. Yeah. We're going to do vegetables tonight. Right. Lots of vegetables.
We didn't even talk about sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I got to kind of wrap it up because I'm going to see Prong and Power Flow tonight, and my friend's going to come over here, and we're going to go to
the show. Well, that's cool, man. We kept you for a lot longer than we anticipated, so we really appreciate it.
I got to eat something before I go.
Okay.
All right, man. Well, we'll let you go. Good luck with Dress the Dead. I hope you guys come to the East Coast because we'd love to come see you guys.
Hey, we have family on the West Coast. We can go to the West Coast and see them.
That's true. Our sister lives in San Francisco. So
she lives in Petaluma.
We're going to play in San Francisco on, what is it, September. I think it's the day before the season, football season kicks off. So I think it's Saturday, September 8th, I think.
Oh.
And we're going to play at the bottom of the hill, which will be like, that's a great historic club. And awesome. Kind of working our way through some smaller shows. It's a small room, but it's a historical room. It's really good.
Cool. Yeah. All right, man. So, well, we'll let you go. Day. Yeah. We'll let you go. Enjoy Prong.
Yeah.
And thank you so much again for joining us. It was a blast talking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You guys know your shit. It was fun.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks.
Man. Yeah. If you didn't know your shit, I guess I probably would have ended this about 45 minutes.
If you ever want to come back, you're welcome to come back. If you're
open door policy. Absolutely.
Open door policy.
Yeah. Maybe every 6 months or so.
Cool.
That sounds awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Man. See you.
See you.
All right. Next time.
All right.
Yep. Easy.
Well, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was very, very gracious of him to take time out to talk to us and reminisce about metal and give us some stories we'd never heard before.
Yeah.
I learned some stuff tonight for sure.
A little bit, yeah.
He got to see Cliff Burton in a fucking living room. God.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's the right place, right time.
Yep.
That's what that is.
Well, so let's go ahead and end it.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So, I don't know where you go from there. So yeah, let's end it.
Yeah, you can find us on social media, facebook.com/somewhereintimepodcast. Or on Twitter. Our handle is SIT Music Podcast. And Instagram.com/somewhereintimepodcast. So that's it.
Cool.
Thanks again, Craig. Le Cicero.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Yes. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Energy, aggression. Power.
To sum it up, it's a
vulgar display of power.
Metal and certain other forms of rock give teenagers something to believe in that they get no place else.
The human element of making music is what's most important. Singing into a microphone and learning to play an instrument, that's the most important thing.